Friday, everybody. My name is Mike Cutler. I welcome you all to my program. Appropriately enough, it's named the Michael Cutler Hour. I thank you for joining me. I hope you've all had a great week. With all the crazy stuff going around, you sometimes get the feeling that Rod Serling has been writing the script over at the Twilight Zone. For those of you new to the program, my name is Mike Cutler. I'm a retired INS agent, and I usually deal with issues that relate to national security, border security, that sort of thing. If you'd like to learn a little bit more about me so that those who are already familiar with me and the program don't have to listen to this yet again, please go to my website, michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. You can also check out a wonderful website. I'm very proud to be a senior fellow with an organization known as Californians for Population Stabilization. Their awesome website is capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. You know, California has been getting hammered virtually into oblivion from the economic perspectives and from so many other perspectives because of the failures of the federal government to secure our borders, enforce our immigration laws. Certainly not limited to California or the so-called four border states. Really and truly, we have 50 border states. If your state has a seaport or an international airport, you most certainly are living in a border state. And when folks, illegal aliens, run the border, they don't come the way Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin did. They don't come to set foot on American soil, plant a flag, grab some rocks, and go home. They're headed for the rest of the country. So this is a crisis for all of America, but California has been in the forefront of this battle. CAPS started there, and I'm very happy to be able to join them there, even though I'm on the other side of the country on the East Coast. We have an interesting program lined up for you tonight, and it's going to be a tough program. There's a gentleman by the name of Don Rosenberg, whose 25-year-old son was killed by an alien who was driving a car without a license, ran him down. The story is so horrific. I was on another radio program with Vince Daniels last Saturday. Don and I were both invited to come on to the program. When I heard Don's compelling story, it kept me awake. It still is disturbing. I find it difficult to sleep. But we need to deal with the unvarnished truth. We need to understand how we're being betrayed by our own government. Abraham Lincoln very eloquently described America's government as a government of the people, by the people, for the people. You'd be hard-pressed to find too many people who would tell you that that standard so wonderfully articulated by our nation's 16th president is still indeed a nation of, by, and for the American people. Don's story shows you just how we've been betrayed on so many levels. I don't want to get into it. I want him to be able to tell you exactly what happened. I don't know how this guy has the strength to talk about it. It's just heartbreaking. But what you need to know is that this is not a single event. It's not a one-time deal. It's not something that happened and will never happen again. In fact, every year, as I once said at a congressional hearing before the Immigration Subcommittee, more Americans lose their lives to illegal aliens and aliens who violate our laws than were lost during the attacks of 9/11. And in fact, Congressman Steve King from Iowa, who had been the ranking member of the Immigration Subcommittee back when the Democrats controlled the House. Steve, in fact, had been at the hearing where I made that point. He then, to my surprise, quoted me not long ago when he did a news conference on the steps of the Capitol and talked about the victims of illegal immigration. So this is really an important story. Also, just to fill you in while we wait for Don to join us, we're having the screening of a wonderful documentary that I'm so proud to be a part of. It's happening in New York this weekend, but it will be happening in other parts of the country. It's called They Come to America. Dennis Michael Lynch is the director and the force behind this documentary. Very important film. Please go to their website, theycometoamerica.com, or go to my website, michaelcutler.net. It's a film that everyone needs to see. It certainly lays it out, and people really need to understand what we're dealing with. So something else that I'm very proud of is to be involved with that particular documentary. Dennis did an amazing job putting it together. You know, I want to make something also very clear. Most people associate those of us who want secure borders with being conservatives, you know, the right wing of the Republican Party. I'm a lifelong Democrat. I consider myself a centrist to leaning towards liberal. And when you listen to Don, you will find out that he's far more liberal probably than I am. You see, the immigration crisis that our nation confronts today that impacts so many of the challenges and threats is neither a conservative nor a liberal issue. It's an American issue. The immigration laws that are being violated not only by illegal aliens, but by cities and states that declare themselves sanctuaries. The same laws that are being ignored and hence violated by the federal government have two goals as their objective. Save American lives, save American jobs. How anybody could look at those two goals and ascribe them to the Looney Tune right takes my breath away. The immigration laws are designed simply to keep aliens out of our country whose presence is problematic. And if you go to Title 8, United States Code, Section 212, I don't like to get into law because that bores people, and the last thing I want to do is bore you. But I also do want to educate you. If you go to Title 8, United States Code, Section 212, you will find a listing of all the categories of aliens who we're supposed to keep out of the United States. Kind of the way a homeowner would look through the peephole before allowing a stranger into his home. It starts with aliens with dangerous communicable diseases, aliens who suffer mental illness and are prone to violence, or the sex offenders, the pedophiles, the rapists, convicted felons, human rights violators, war criminals, spies, terrorists, drug traffickers, human traffickers, money launderers, members of violent gangs, and the list goes on. How anyone in his or her right mind could look at laws that intend to prevent the entry of those folks, plus the entry of people who would take the jobs that Americans desperately need, leaves me speechless. These laws are common sense, they are reasonable, they are rational, and they are utterly, completely, and totally blind as to race, religion, or ethnicity. The only distinction that the immigration laws of the United States makes is as to whether or not an alien, or rather that a person is an alien or a citizen. And there's that word, folks, alien. Oh, my God, I said it. Now I'm going to get hit by lightning because the open borders anarchists would tell you, my gosh, the word alien is hate speech. You know what's really bad about the word alien if you're on the other side of the argument? It provides clarity to the debate, and if you know you're pushing a weak position, the last thing you want is clarity. It's not that the aliens are hiding in the shadows. God knows no one's looking for them. It's that they're hiding the truth from us in the shadows. Because the term alien is simply a legal term. It's part of the Immigration and Nationality Act. And the term alien is defined as simply being any person who is not a citizen or national of the United States. Now, if you can find an insult in that definition, if you can find anyone being denigrated or demeaned by that definition, I'd love for you to call me up and tell me how it demeans or embarrasses or impugns anybody. The phone number here, by the way, is 310-982-4145, 310-982-4145. Again, my name is Mike Cutler. This is the Michael Cutler Hour, and we are breathlessly awaiting Don Rosenberg to join us on the program from California. His story, I am afraid to tell you, will probably keep you up tonight, but it's a story that I want you to listen to. And when you listen to what Don has to say, I want you to ask yourself a simple question. Whatever happened to the concept of equal protection? See, equal protection is supposed to mean that nobody gets punished unfairly in America, that people's rights when they are accused of a crime are protected. And that's certainly a very important tenet of our criminal justice system, of our way of life. But when you think of protection, we must also think about the protection of the victims of crimes. How on earth, how in the world can we talk about equal protection when the citizens of America are currently not being protected by their own government, whether it's on the federal level, the state level, or the city level? California has now come up with an incredible idea. They are no longer going to impound the vehicles of cars being driven by unlicensed motorists out of a concern, catch this, that it would be unfair to illegal aliens who can't get driver's licenses, who would then have to forfeit their cars, even though they're not supposed to be driving, so they can go to work, even though they're not supposed to be working. When you look at that slippery slope, you got to ask yourself, what in God's name are they thinking about? And that's really where we are. I see Don is joining us. Let me bring him on and introduce him to you. Don Rosenberg, good evening. Happy Friday. Thank you so much for joining the program today.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Mike.
We've become friends out of this past week. It's been a rare day that you and I haven't had lengthy conversations. Why don't you tell my listeners who you are and what your cause is, because you know I stand shoulder to shoulder with you.
Okay. Thank you. I live in California. In November of 2010, my son Drew, who was a second-year law student in San Francisco, was hit and killed by an unlicensed driver. The driver was trying to beat a light, had stopped, actually, and then at the last second, with no blinker, made a quick left-hand turn. My son was on a motorcycle. They collided. Neither of them, according to eyewitnesses, were going very fast. But instead of stopping, and my son at that point, you know, as far as we know, and the medical examiner's feelings, was alive and actually barely injured. He had no head injuries, didn't even have any broken bones. But the driver, instead of stopping, accelerated and ran over his abdomen. The bike, his helmet came off, and again, eyewitness testimony, both the bike, his body, and his helmet stopped the car from going forward. So he went into reverse, drove over him a second time, and then trying to flee, drove over him a third time, only stopping because a man had gotten out of the car and literally risked his life, stood in front of the car with his hands up, and the guy stopped. He stopped with his tire on my son's abdomen. Five men had to lift the car off of him, and he was, you know, dead on the scene.
You know, I mean, the story, when you tell it to me, I just get this wave of nausea and anger, and I can't even tell you. Well, it really has a visceral impact. But now here's my question to you. We hear all these concerns about the poor people who come from other countries, and many of them are. Let's be clear. Illegal aliens who are simply working illegally or violating our laws, creating a nightmare for us, but they're desperate people. But this goes way beyond that. So for a change, I want to know what the impact was on you and your family, your wife. I know, thank God, you have other children. What has this done to you?
Well, I mean, destroyed us is the easy answer. But I started doing a lot of research on unlicensed drivers. And basically what I found out is, you know, well, first, there's two kinds of unlicensed drivers. There's those people who have had a license and it's been suspended or revoked, typically for bad driving, drunk driving, sometimes even lack of paying child support. And then there are those people that have never had a license at all. And we're mostly here talking about people that never had a license at all. And 90-plus percent, probably 98% of them, are in the country illegally. And in 40 of the 50 states, they can't get a license. So, you know, what I discovered, of course, in this guy's case, he had been caught a few months before driving without a license, and they let him go. He was charged with driving a wrong way down a one-way street, no license, no insurance. They allowed him to plead guilty to the driving the wrong way down a one-way street. His car was, although his car by law has to be impounded for 30 days in California, it was impounded for less than 24 hours. He got it out, started driving, and killed my son. And unfortunately, what I discovered was this was not an exception. This is the rule. And not just in California, pretty
well,
much
stop
all over.
Stop one sec, Don. What's not the exception or the rule? What specifically are we discussing?
Well, not prosecuting unlicensed drivers when they're caught is the rule, not the exception. And then finding out even further, when they do kill somebody, they are typically charged with a misdemeanor, which in California is no more than a year in jail, and, you know, they rarely ever get jail time, and they pay a fine.
And that also means that this guy was under what they call temporary protective status because he was, I believe, El Salvadoran?
Well, he was from Honduras.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe he's under temporary protective status.
Right.
We were originally told that he was here illegally. Then we were told he was here legally. And when I asked the district attorney's office and the police, okay, why did you make, you know, why did you think he was here illegally? And now why is he here legally? How did he get into the country? Whatever. They refused to answer. I did hire a private investigator, and all he could tell me is that the guy came in the country, and he was given a Social Security number, and when I did my research on temporary protective status, it certainly looked like, you know, as I put the pieces together, that that's how he was here, but no one has told me that, so that's my own theory.
But how did he enter originally? Do we know if you ran the border?
I don't. No matter of fact, after I hung up with you today, I was going to ask you that question. Is there a way to find out how he originally got here? Because I don't know, and I haven't been able to find out. I know when he came. I have all that information, but there's no information as to how he came.
They gave you a specific date?
I may have. I'll have to go back and look at what the...
Well, you know what it may be? It may be that when they filled out the paperwork for TPS, temporary protected status, that they went along with whatever he claimed was his date of entry.
Yeah, and that the data that I have... is from a private investigator. It's not from the police. It's not from the DA's office.
Now, you know what's remarkable, and, you know, you and I had this conversation over the phone privately. There are privacy laws in the United States, folks, that are designed to protect your privacy, as the name implies. But the law was very specific because as an agent, because I was with the INS for 30 years, one of the things I had training in was the privacy laws. The privacy laws are only supposed to protect the privacy of United States citizens and lawful green card holders, lawful immigrants, not anybody else. So if you're here as a student or you're here as a journalist or you're here as a member of the clergy, you're not supposed to be protected by the Privacy Act. Now, what's interesting, see, it's both sides of the aisle, a pox on both of the houses. George W. Bush... Mike Chertoff, at the time Secretary of Homeland Security, I call DHS, by the way, the Department of Homeland Surrender. I make it real clear where I stand on this insanity. He made the decision to issue a policy directive which had the force of law. Isn't it nice? Forget the law. We'll just issue a directive. And what was Mike's directive? If you're here illegally, you will get the same protection of privacy that U.S. citizens get. Now, I want you to stop and think about it. Think about, because of due process and so forth, how many times have you seen some guy get accused, some school teacher accused of fondling a girl, and there he is doing what we call in New York the perp walk, because in New York the cops refer to somebody who's arrested as the perp, short for perpetrator, as in perpetrator of the crime. So here is a guy, has yet to be indicted, has yet to be anything. They've just arrested him, and now they're going to put him before a grand jury and so forth. But there he is unceremoniously on TV doing the perp walk, on the front page of the local paper, doing the perp walk. All of his neighbors now know that some girl in high school said, he grabbed my leg, or God knows what he grabbed. Doesn't matter that 5 months later there's a little disclaimer, you know, on page 19, that says, well, the girl admitted it never happened. She was angry that he flunked her because he was her math teacher. So there's no concern about the privacy of that teacher. But when we talk about illegal aliens, oh, my God, they are sacrosanct. You can't go near them. We will not talk about them. And, in fact, ICE now has a policy just about carved in stone that whenever they're able to and they issue a press release, they can talk about an illegal alien who gets arrested. But they don't use the term illegal alien. They don't tell you his immigration status or even that he was an alien in the first place. They'll identify somebody as saying, you know, a California man was arrested. A Chicago man was arrested. And then you go to the newspapers, and the newspapers will tell you, yeah, the guy was from another country. How astonishing is that?
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that, because just yesterday, you know there's a whole big thing going on in L.A. now where Chief Beck has decided that he doesn't want to, you know, he doesn't want to obey the law, the town cars,
right,
when they catch these people. Well,
by the way, not to cut you off, I just have to ask you this. Isn't that an incredible irony? The chief law enforcement officer ignoring the law.
Well, the
juxtapositioning of those two terms and those two concepts makes my brain vibrate.
It is pretty amazing. I mean, for the most part, this has been in the police in most jurisdictions in California have been obeying the law. It's been the district attorney's offices, or in L.A., it's the city attorney who's responsible. They've been ignoring the law and just letting these people go. But now the police chief, because in his words, it's not fair.
Fair to whom?
It's not fair to the illegal aliens that they can't get, since they can't get driver's licenses, it's not fair that they have their car impounded when they drive, even though obviously it's not fair that they're here. It's not fair that they're working. It's not fair that they're driving. It's not fair that they don't have insurance.
And it's certainly not fair that your young boy's dead.
Right. But, well, and at one of the police commission hearings where they were discussing this, when he met, and I was speaking, and I said, you want to talk, because ironically, the meeting was being held in Northridge, which was literally right down the road from where my son is buried. And I said to him,
in the police commission,
and a matter of fact, I think it might be on that you know, YouTube clip. I said, you want to talk not fair? You get in my car. Let's drive down to my son's cemetery. You tell him face-to-face that it's not fair.
Yeah, you did say it. You know, your appearance there was extremely powerful, and it gave me goosebumps. And, in fact, I put a link to a quick video of it, out in the email that I put out earlier today to tell people that you were going to be on my program this evening.
Oh, thanks. Well, I'd like a lot of people to see it, because I can't bring my son back. But I know, you know, people ask me, why are you doing this? And the only thing I can say is, if somebody had done this a few years ago, my son would be alive. So I want to make sure that no one else gets killed. But unfortunately, practically every single day, at least, you know, in the state of California, somebody is killed by an unlicensed driver. And there's just
slash illegal alien.
Oh, what is? I mean, here's one today. Yes. And ironically, this one really hit home, because it was very similar to my son's, where a guy made a left-hand turn, ran over a guy on a motorcycle and killed him. And he's, you know, 20 years old. The article doesn't say whether he's illegal or not, but I'm assuming he is, because he doesn't have a driver's license, and obviously he's old enough to get one. And I don't want to profile, but he is Hispanic, so, you know, the odds are pretty high in L.A.
Yes, but I also want to make this clear, now that you've said that, because this is an important point, folks. There are millions of illegal aliens in the United States who are not Latinos. And I will tell you, I think one of the great injustices being done by the politicians and these so-called journalists who talk about the Latino vote, you don't have to be Latino to be an illegal alien, and you can be Latino and be a United States citizen. And so I think that what we're really doing by this insanity of only saying, well, it's all about Mexico, is we are putting lawful residents and United States citizens of Hispanic origins in a very bad light, because the politicians are skewing the conversation. And I don't blame you for what you're saying, and in your neck of the woods, a lot of the illegals would be Latinos because they've come across from the Mexican border. But you understand the distinction that I'm making.
Oh, absolutely. Now, look, I'll tell you, at that meeting in Northridge, California in January, there were over 500 people, standing room only. The police, I had friends texting me because they couldn't get in because it was so packed. About 80 people spoke, and about 20 of them were Hispanic. And with the exception of three, every single Hispanic that spoke, and many of them very angrily, were on my side.
Yep.
Because they feel like they're getting disparaged because of this.
And they
are. They don't like it either.
And by the way, now, let's clear the air about this, because this is a point that I've been making wherever I can go. Pardon me, folks. Look, let's start to analyze this. Think about how many times the oracles of brilliance on the Sunday morning news shows, intone with all the wisdom of Solomon that they don't have. If the president wants the Latino vote, they've got to vote for the DREAM Act. It's about the kids, first of all. It's not. The age cutoff is 35. Second of all, they've got to vote to legalize everybody is here. You know what? The reason we have the immigration laws, as I mentioned before Don joined us, is to keep people out of the country who are problematic. If criminals come into the United States, then that's why they run the border, because they know they can't come in legally, so they sneak in. If they come in, and it's not just within the Latino or the Hispanic community, it's the Russian community, the Asian community, the African community, the Caribbean community, criminals are coming in. Not all of them are, but they are, some of them. And they're setting up shop in the immigrant communities, in the ethnic immigrant communities. So who's most at risk if we're talking about MS-13 or the Mexican cartels? The most likely victim will be a member of the Hispanic community. And why on earth would a United States citizen of Hispanic origins not be concerned that those laws be enforced to keep criminals and bad guys out? Why would they possibly, how could they possibly benefit by having more workers come into the country who will undermine them in the labor market? And why, if you're a member of the Latino community, would you be okay with gang members coming in who may well either attack you or your kids or try to recruit your children?
Right.
Where is the sense to any of this, Don?
Well, and also Hispanics disproportionately killed, you know, in higher numbers by unlicensed drivers.
Oh, yeah, on top of it. And,
right.
And you know, the word that gets me, because I did a hearing at New York before the New York State Senate, and the big argument is, well, these folks are going to drive anyway. What does that mean, they're going to drive anyway? And I said, well, you know what? Convicted felons are going to carry guns anyway, so maybe by that reason we should be giving convicted felons pistol permits.
Right, yeah, that's been set out here. And basically, well, they're going to drive anyway because, as I said to Chief Beck, because I did have a one-on-one meeting with him, I said, you say that, but the reason they're going to drive anyway is because you let them drive anyway. You do nothing when they're caught. The district attorney's office will not prosecute them if they haven't killed
right.
somebody. So if there's no penalty, why would you not drive? Matter of fact, the guy who killed my son when he was caught in San Francisco a few months before, he got off lighter than we would get off.
Right, and that's often the case.
And assuming that we all had a license, because he can't get any points on his driver's license, he doesn't have one. He can't have his insurance rates raised because he doesn't have any insurance. They can't send him to driver's school, which out here costs about $200, because he doesn't have a license. So it's.
I'll give you a better example. You know, in law enforcement, you know, you learn to not use the word impossible. You start to use the word improbable, and even then you don't believe improbable anymore. We had a case of an individual from the Dominican Republic who claimed to be an illegal alien, caught with a couple of kilos of cocaine, as I remember the case. This is about 15 years ago. And I was asked if I would go with the state prosecutor and do what's known as a proffer session. And what a proffer session is, it's like a bargaining session where the guy that's arrested says, look, let's play, let's make a deal. If I give you information, will you reduce time on my potential jail sentence or maybe knock off some of the criminal charges or whatever? It's a swap meet, you know. I'll trade you my baseball cards and you give me your old tricycle. You know, I give you information and you take away one of the criminal charges and you reduce my sentence. So I went there and I did what we always do. I said, look, we have a deal if and only if I don't catch you lying. If I catch you in a lie, the party's over and I will tell the judge you lied and we will drop a safe on your head. So the guy tells me, no, 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 I'm an illegal alien. I shouldn't be here. I told the judge, I'm telling you, I've got a wife and five kids, whatever it was, back in the Dominican Republic. If you let me go home, I will never come back again. So I asked him for his name. We run the name. We come up no record. And then I asked him how he came into the United States. Now, he's in New York. He's from the Dominican Republic. The usual way of getting to New York from the Dominican Republic is either landing at Kennedy Airport with a visa, maybe going into Puerto Rico illegally and then flying on a domestic flight from Puerto Rico into New York. But this guy claimed he came through the Mexican border near Tijuana. very unusual for a Dominican. So I said, well, how did you get from Tijuana, which is, takes you into San Diego, from there to New York? He said, you won't believe this, I took a bus from San Diego to Houston, and from Houston I took an airplane. I said, okay, how long was the bus ride? 3 hours. I never met anybody who has been on that rocket bus yet. 3 hours. So I knew something was definitely wrong. We eventually determined that this guy had a green card, but knew that if he claimed to be an illegal alien who would promise to never come back, instead of getting maybe 10 years in jail, he'd get 2 years in jail. And then they come back with their green card on their real name, and the two things would never match. So the likelihood is that he had this his back way of coming into the United States without anybody being the wiser. Now, how crazy is that?
A recently retired policeman in Los Angeles told me this is just Los Angeles City, there's over 1 million warrants out for people's arrest that match up to no one.
Yes.
Because
yeah.
they give
we're
they
looking
give
for the invisible
names.
Man.
And then here, you'll love this quote because you're talking about a police officer. This happened the end of last year in Santa Rosa, where two people, a five-year-old was killed by an unlicensed driver who had been caught 5 days before and his car wasn't impounded. But this is the Sonoma County Assistant Sheriff. Sonoma County is now going to accept Mexican consulate-issued cards for ID, so it will reduce the number of people booked into jail for lacking an identification. And will reduce deportations from the jail for illegal aliens. This is his quote. This is the police, Sonoma County Assistant Sheriff Lorenzo Duenas, I guess that's how he pronounced his name. Quote, today is a great day. We're now going to accept the matricular consular ID.
Wow.
So here,
I mean,
here
that takes
have,
my breath away. To give you background on this one, folks, and I know you know this because I have to tell you, the research that you have done has been very, very impressive, Don. And talking with you, I know you've been digging through the books. There's a guy by the name of Stephen McCraw, who at the time was the assistant director for the FBI in charge of intelligence. He went before the House Immigration Subcommittee back in 2003. I've testified before that subcommittee at least 8 or 9 times myself. And he warned that acceptance of Mexican matricula cards constituted nothing short of a threat to national security because there would be no way of verifying that the ID really accurately reflected the name of the bearer. Plus, he was concerned that somebody could get multiple IDs, multiple Mexican matricula cards, which is what I believe contributed to the economic disaster that we find ourselves in, because they were giving mortgages and credit cards, which of course are non-secured loans, to illegal aliens who were able to show a matricula card. And you know, I always like to say that the only thing worse than no security is false security. When an illegal alien can't prove who they are, you say, well, you see that? We have no idea who this guy is. You better be careful. On the other hand, when they come up with ID that becomes acceptable and they can build on that and get other ID, with each document they get with a name on it, they build their credibility so that pretty soon they can conduct business as usual just the way you or I can. Now, how crazy is that? In this era of the Patriot Act, in this era of getting groped by the TSA at the airport and x-rayed, I mean, I don't know why they don't combine Obamacare with TSA security. You can get it all done at one shot, you know?
Look, you know, in the last job I had, and I forget what the form is, but every new employee, you know, had
the
to
I-9.
Go. Yeah, the I-9 form. And because it was, you know, it wasn't my company, but I was running this division, I was basically signing my life away every time I signed it, saying, yes, I've examined these IDs, and they're, you know, they're valid, and, you know, this person can, you know, can work here. So, and
well,
now,
you know, did I tell you that I worked on a case in Hawaii? We had a bunch of illegal aliens working for a farm in Hawaii. They all had phony ID, but the ID was good enough to get them past TSA because they were flown from California to Hawaii, but they wanted to make these two guys who worked on the farm accountable. they were prosecuted criminally. They were acquitted ultimately. I was the expert witness in the case. Normally, I don't help in fact, I will never help if I believe that the people are guilty. In this case, I thought it was a miscarriage of justice. But how wacky is that?
Yeah, well, what Beck is wanting to do, although there's been one lawsuit filed already, the district attorney said he can't do this, the state legislative council, which is the attorneys for the legislature, said you can't do this, but the police commission voted 4-1 to do it anyway, and now it's all tied up in these lawsuits. But what he was saying is if you are here illegally, but if you have a valid ID, and he was going to accept the Mexican consular ID or a birth certificate.
Oh, which, that's good.
Right,
hey, you look just like your birth certificate. Congratulations,
Don. Right, right. I mean, yeah. So you can see where he's coming. So he'd accept that if you had insurance and if your car was registered, then they wouldn't impound your car. Oh, and you didn't have a prior conviction, they wouldn't impound your car. Well, first of all, of course, what he never said at the time when he made this announcement was that the city attorney's office,
easy for
they
you
don't prosecute. So you're never going to have a prior conviction because they won't convict. And I talked to the DMV. You can get insured. Well, first of all, in California, even though I have two different opinions from the California Insurance Commissioner's office, one says it's illegal to sell insurance to somebody who doesn't have a driver's license. Another person there said it's legal, and now they won't talk to me or my state senator now that we presented them two different documents saying, you know, two different things. But you can get insurance. You don't even have to have the insurance company give you insurance. If you go to a broker and fill out an application, you can take the application. Well, first of all,
which proves nothing.
Right. They'll give you the application. They'll give you the insurance card, you know, saying you have XYZ insurance company. When you go to the DMV, they will give you the registration for your car, and you can call up 5 minutes later and say, never mind, don't process. But you now have your sticker that's good for the next year. You have an insurance card that's good for at least 6 months that says you have insurance. So the whole thing is, it's an absolute joke. And as I said to Beck, one-on-one, I said, having an ID, having insurance, and having a registration doesn't mean you know how to drive. It doesn't mean you know the rules of the road. It doesn't mean you can read the signs. And it doesn't even mean you can see, because, of course, everybody has to have an eye test.
Not so in New York. Now you're on the honor system.
And I will tell you something. A friend of mine who happens to be Mexican, he's a citizen here, but he came over 20-some years ago legally.
Right.
I was telling him this story, and he said to me, you know, and he was talking about illegal immigrants, even though he just used the word. He says, have you ever seen a Mexican with glasses? And I said, you know, I didn't really notice, but if you're telling me that. So you've got people out on the road, forget whether they're here illegally or not. Most people, once they hit 30, 35, they need glasses. And I would bet anything that illegal aliens have not gone to get LASIK surgery.
Probably not.
So,
probably,
you know,
not.
Right, probably not. So forget everything else. They may not even be able to see properly. And as a matter of fact, the guy who killed my son, he drove up a one-way street. Now, it could have been, you know, he could have just made an accident and driven the wrong way. Maybe he couldn't identify the sign. Who knows? And his statement when the police showed up, you know, on the scene was, I never saw him. It was in a lit intersection. My son was going about 10 miles an hour. He was at a full stop before he, you know.
What time of day was this?
It was 5:30. It was dark because it was November, but it was in the middle of San Francisco. The intersection is very well lit.
And I'm sure he had his headlights on.
He did. Matter of fact, the eyewitness testimony that my son had his headlights on. He had reflectors on his helmet and on the bike.
And I'm thinking, I wouldn't doubt the driver had his headlights on.
Oh, well, I don't know. You know, it never came up. He never put his blinker on. That was said. But even so, it was, you know, and I've driven in San Francisco at night at Main Street, and I've asked the DA's office, I said, you know, because he still hasn't gone to trial yet, even though that's a whole joke in and of itself. But I asked them, I said, did you ever have this guy eye tested? And, you know, they won't even answer my question. Now, he doesn't have to testify against himself, but because he made a statement that I didn't see him, they have the right to test. Check his eyes.
Did anybody ever check for drugs or anything?
He was clean. He didn't have any drugs in his system. They did a breathalyzer on scene, and although that was new, that was the paperwork on scene. The police officer did check off the box that he thought that he may have been under the influence, but all the tests came back negative. He was in the car with two of his kids and his wife. Here's the irony to all of this.
Okay.
He was going to parenting school.
Oh, brother.
Parenting class. You don't go to parenting class because you're a good parent. So he was ordered either by the court or by somebody to go to parenting class.
And I'm sure that nobody is willing to give you those records either.
They're saying his record is clean.
Yeah, okay.
So he,
by the way,
and
I have to ask this question for my audience, and you don't have to answer it.
Yeah.
But if you had to describe yourself politically, how far to the right are you?
I'm 98% to the left.
You mean you're not some right wing nut who's just wanting to beat up on immigrants, right?
No, everybody I know, I'm the furthest to the left that I could possibly be. I even, because I've been on television a lot and on the radio a lot out here, I was actually concerned between, some friends of mine that are, they're Hispanic, even my gardener who I've known for 22 years and he was here with his entire family because they knew Drew since he was 4 years old. I've seen his two kids being born and one's in college now and the other, actually they're both in college now, the other one's a freshman. And when I saw him one day and I said, I don't know if you or any of your guys, I mean, he has a huge company. They may see me on TV and, I can't control interviews when they interview you and then they edit. And I just, I want you to know that if anything sounds, racist, it's not me. And he looked at me and says, do you think that I or any of the people who work for me for a minute would think you're a racist? I mean, I'm as far
but
away
how infuriating
from that.
Is that labeling? Just like the Latino vote, this business about, if you want secure borders, you're, a racist, a bigot. Jews.
Mean,
that makes us among America's smallest minorities.
I'm Jewish. I've been called anti-Semitic, and I know you were too. Considering my leftist views during, right after 9/11 and with, President Bush and all the grief and error, I was called unpatriotic. I voted constantly for people. I mean, I'm not one of the 1%, but I'm probably in the 2%, and I constantly vote for people to raise my taxes.
Yep.
That's just what I am, and I'm not going to change because of this. And believe me, I harbor no ill will against a lot of these people, because if they're coming here to make their lives better, even though it's wrong, I can understand that. I mean, I have a family, and I'll do anything for my family.
But you know what the sad thing is, and we talked about this, but I want you folks out there to understand what's happening. Mexico uses America as its safety valve, as do other countries. So rather than create opportunities for their own citizens in their own country, I think I may have said this to you on the phone earlier today. Pardon me, I can't seem to get rid of Kermit the Frog. He's taken up residence. The average American couple looks at their baby sleeping in the crib and says, gee, we'd love our son or daughter to go to a college. Although if we keep on importing all the high-tech workers, I'm not so sure why anymore. But the idea is that the path to success is in education. In Mexico, the average family looks at their child sleeping in the crib and says, for success, we want our kid to go to America. Now, isn't it sad that a country that's able to produce somebody like Carlos Slim, the wealthiest man in the world, who's a Mexican citizen, that citizens of that country still think that the only way to really break out of poverty is to head north, not to be able to stay within the bounds of their own country and build a successful life for themselves?
It is sad. Look, I in my research and also in talking to you, I've come across so many horrible stories of the abuse that happens to the people that are here illegally, because people who abuse them know, what are they going to say? They can't say anything. So they get away.
They count on the fact that they're vulnerable. They pick on the vulnerable.
They get away with abusing them constantly. And I, you know, look, I see people, you know, you drive around in L.A. or in the L.A. area, you're always going to see, you know, these people, you know, on street corners, you know, hoping somebody picks them up to dig a ditch or do something. And I know some of these people, they'll pay them $10 for a day working in 95-degree heat, digging, you know, digging holes and whatever, and they walk away with $10 or $20. Because, you know, they promise them more. They'll promise them, I'll give you $10 an hour. And then after working for 9 hours in the sun, what are they going to do? Go to the police and report the person?
And you know what's so funny is that, you know, I listen to Bill Maher, and you know, he always makes the point, oh, the way they abuse the poor Chinese workers, and now in the New York Times, I think it was today or yesterday, an article how they're going to change the way they work them in their factories, and that's a good thing. But the point is that when Bill Maher jumps up and down about the abuse of Chinese workers, when you talk about illegal aliens, suddenly it's a different story. There's this disconnect. The only reason that people hire illegal aliens intentionally, which is why I helped the folks in Hawaii, by the way, because the people there were being paid not just minimum wage, but prevailing wage. Some of them were making $11 or $11.50 an hour, whatever, great living conditions, free health care. That's not the way people generally hire illegal aliens. They hire them to treat them worse than slaves. What do I mean by worse than slaves? If we were living in that vile, incomprehensible era where slavery was tolerated in parts of our country, the guy who bought a slave, and I can't even begin to comprehend that kind of a mindset or that thought process. I mean, it goes beyond vulgar and immoral. But the person that did that said, well, I have a vested interest in this human being that I'm treating as a beast of burden. When you hire an illegal alien, however, if that poor SOB loses his arm in the machinery that he's running, they don't care because he's replaceable. If the guy is lucky, they'll leave them a block from the emergency room at some overcrowded hospital, and they'll just make a phone call and get somebody to replace that illegal alien. And yet there is such a disconnect that so many people don't get it. And in 1986, when we had that sweeping amnesty under the Reagan administration, again, it's both sides of the aisle, folks. You know, not one or the other. For you occupiers out there, let me tell you, it's both sides. Reagan passed Immigration Reform and Control Act. Nearly 4 million people were granted lawful status, and the phones began ringing off the hook in my office. And you know who was calling me, Don? The newly legalized. And why were they calling? Because as soon as they went to Mr. Boss and said, you know, Mr. Boss, I will continue to work for you, but not for $5.50 an hour. Prevailing wage in whatever industry it was back then, 25 years ago, is, you know, $11 an hour. So I want $11 an hour. I want to be paid on the books. And I want to get time and a quarter or time and a half, whatever it was, for the weekends. And immediately they were fired. And they were replaced by the next wave of illegal aliens, which is how we got here today. So this is all about exploitation. And yet, so-called right-wingers are the only ones that are concerned. You mean that the liberals of our country don't care about the exploitation as well as the national security implications and the community safety implications?
Well, I think a lot of them either don't think about it or don't know. The bill, the first bill that my wife and I testified against last year in Sacramento was a bill to, you know, the most effective way to get unlicensed drivers off the road were sobriety checkpoints. For every DUI they would catch, they'd catch anywhere between 5 and 35 unlicensed drivers. And they'd impound their car, you know, and go through the whole process. Of course, they'd never get prosecuted, but they'd impound their car. And they passed a bill, needless to say, over our strenuous objections, that if you're caught at a sobriety checkpoint now, they won't impound your car.
What?
So, and the governor signed it, and now it's the law. Now, I actually have a letter going to Kamala Harris, who's the attorney general of the state, which will get mailed out this weekend. I said, this law is unconstitutional, and I pointed out spots in the Constitution, in the California Constitution, where it's unconstitutional. One of the main, here's the, again, the crazy nonsense that goes on. one of the main issues of why these people needed to drive was so they could, you know, take
go to work.
Well, go to work was number one. Take their kids to school and, you know, pick them up from school and go to the doctor. Now, of course, except for maybe a very small percentage, none of those things happen at night, and these sobriety checkpoints can only be at night. The state will not pay for them, and the federal government chips in money, too. They won't pay for them if they're during the day. So the time they're getting caught is the time where they actually don't need to drive, or for the most part don't need to drive, but they drive anyway, and 50% of the deaths they cause are at night, and 48% of those deaths, the guy's drunk. You know, the driver was drunk when they killed somebody. Let me just finish. So the interesting thing is, in the California Constitution, Article 1, Section 1, Paragraph 28, specifically says that anybody who's at a school, that schools have should have extra protection. Matter of fact, I think I have it right here. All the papers I got here. But schools have specific extra protection. And now they're saying, oh, but it's okay for you to drive your kids to school? Even when the state has already said it's necessary, and this is a quote, this is vehicle code, it is necessary and appropriate to take additional steps to prevent unlicensed drivers from driving, including the civil forfeiture of vehicles used by unlicensed drivers. The state has a critical interest in enforcing its traffic laws and in keeping unlicensed drivers from illegally driving. Seizing the vehicles used by unlicensed drivers serves a significant governmental and public interest, namely the protection of the health, safety, and welfare of Californians from the harm of unlicensed drivers who are involved in a disproportionate number of traffic accidents. And now they're saying, oh, you can take your kids to school.
You know, I remember when my dad, may rest in peace, handed me the keys to the family car. And I'll never forget, you know, it was a very solemn moment. I mean, you know, I was doing cartwheels. I'm 18.
Right.
But he said, don't forget something. Potentially that car is more lethal than a handgun. And so we're you know, imagine in New York or perhaps California. I'm not sure how bad. I'm sure in California it's the same deal. Imagine running around with a gun with no permit. How quickly would you wind up in jail? Because it's a safety issue.
Well, out of the 33,000 deaths last year, 8,000 were from unlicensed drivers.
You know, this is – where is this? Just in California or nationally?
No, that's nationally.
Okay. Now, you know, here's something that's very interesting, and I hope that Steve King, Congressman King, who's one of my heroes, and yes, he's a conservative, and no, I'm not, and yes, I'm a registered Democrat, but I would campaign for Steve King in a New York second because – he's a true leader. And, you know, we don't have to agree with politicians on every issue. But I think the immigration issue is so critical because it impacts every other threat and challenge that we face. He made a statement. I think he came up with the idea that there were at least 7,000 people dying every year because of illegal aliens. That number you gave is just about the motorists. This doesn't include...
Well, yeah, but to be fair, that's all unlicensed. About 4,000... of the 8,000 are unlicensed, give or take.
No, I understand.
There.
But
yeah.
Now look at that number. Now add to that the people killed by the drug trade and gangs and violent criminals.
It's way over 7,000.
But that's my point.
Right.
And boy, he got attacked. Oh, you're making this up. It's not crazy, folks. This is an amazing statistic. We are talking about several people. Statistically, what are we talking about? Maybe 10 people a day dying because we don't secure our borders or enforce our immigration laws, and then the states follow suit with this lunacy that we're experiencing, not just in California, but elsewhere.
Yeah, and the statistics, you know, the AAA Foundation...
This is not a victimless crime by any stretch of anybody's
imagination. And you know what you have to do, and unfortunately I'm a member of this club that I, you know, would never want to join. Those 4,000 people that are killed, you may have, you know, killed 4,000, but you've destroyed the lives of tens of thousands. Because for every one of those 4,000 people, there's at least 5 to 10 people that are so close to them
that they're devastated.
You know, look, in my case, it's, you know, myself, my two kids, my wife, obviously some very close relatives. Drew, here's another irony for you. Drew's girlfriend is from London, or is actually from England. They met in London when he was doing a semester abroad. And he actually spent almost a year in London in between college and law school. She was going to come over here, but she didn't because her, you know, she couldn't get a work visa. So yep. She would stay there because they were probably going to get married. So she'd stay there until, you know, till such time they got married, and then she could come here. Had she broken the law and come here, he wouldn't have had a motorcycle, and he'd be alive. Because a motorcycle wouldn't have worked for two of them. He would have. He had a car here. He actually told me to sell his car because it was, you know, it was tough in San Francisco to have a car. But she could have, because she obeyed the law, and she could have come in on a you know, visitor visa, which she did when she did come to visit. She could have come.
She actually could have come here under the visa waiver program altogether.
So
from England, you don't even need a visa to come here.
Well, whatever it is, but she could only.
She wanted to abide by the law, and it's always the law-abiding people that suffer.
Right. So, you know, so here's another quickie statistic for you. You know, 9/11, what do we have, 2,800 people murdered. Since 9/11, and what did we do? We fought two wars, another 5,000-plus Americans killed, 30,000 injured. We've spent a couple of trillion dollars so far, you know, fighting this war.
Yep.
In that time period,
Fourth Amendment shredded. Let's add that to the list.
Right. Yeah. Right. In that time period, over 40,000 people have been killed in the United States by illegal alien, unlicensed drivers. 40,000. And what are we doing? We're making it easier for them to drive.
I mean, is this insanity? And so, folks, here's the point, and it's funny because Don and I were talking about, by the way, that 20, I think it's 29 and change who were killed on 9/11. Many more have since died or are dying because of the exposure to the toxins.
Right.
There's something like, I think it's 20,000 people are getting medical treatment now because they've suffered cancer and all kinds of ailments.
Which they had to fight the government to get.
And you had Christine Todd Whitman saying, oh, the air is safe, and Rudy Giuliani, who ordered the cops not to wear the protective masks because they worried that this would hurt the value of real estate in Lower Manhattan. You can't make this up, folks. Government by the people? Which people? So my fury, and then we hear, well, the occupiers are often one way, the Tea Party the other. They go so far around the back they meet. This is about government not truly representing the American people. And then you look at the decision, Citizens United, so now they can pump unlimited amounts of money. I wasn't allowed to take a cup of coffee as an agent, right? But these guys can brag about being the best fundraisers. Don, what do you think would have happened if I went to one of my bosses and said, hey, Walt, you should be proud of me. I'm the best fundraiser in the office.
Right.
Could you imagine?
Goodbye, yeah.
I mean, it's astonishing. We get the best government money can buy. But here's the challenge, folks. We are getting the government we deserve because we keep sitting the dance out, okay? When we sit home and we don't make the phone calls, we don't write the letters, we don't vote, we make believe it's somebody else's responsibility. You may as well be living in a dictatorship or in a country ruled by crooks and idiots. And we're almost at the point of the crooks and idiots. I mean, you really have to dig deep and look far to find legitimate leadership today in America. And I blame we, the people, for not being actively involved. And I don't care whether I agree with your political views or not. I want you involved. I want you to, you know, it's like the movie Network. Get off your couch and don't just yell, I'm not going to take it anymore, I'm mad as hell. Do something. Get a hold of your elected representatives on the city level, on the state level, on the federal level. Make them accountable. Be the best employer that you can be. You can do that by, I'm glad you're listening to my radio program tonight. I hope you will continue to join me every Friday. I will try my best to give you interesting guests and people that can inform and advise you and enlighten you. Go to my website, michaelcutler.net. Go to capsweb.org, Californians for Population Stabilization. Get your news from as many sources as possible. But at the end of the day, folks, this lethargy that infected this country has got to stop. This is far more important for you and your children and their children than who's winning Dancing with the Stars or who's going to win the Super Bowl or who's going to win the playoffs. this is America's future that we're fighting for, and we need to enlist you in this citizens' army of activist citizens. That's
hey,
what's
Mike,
really needed.
Mike, I'm not sure what time we end here, but can I say one quick thing?
No, you sure can. We have a couple of minutes to go because we can go over. It's okay.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'll say two quick things. First,
say three. We're running a special, three for the same
price. Three. If
two.
Anybody wants to, I just want to give out some. If anybody
please
wants
do,
to contact
me, please do, Doug.
Me,
go right ahead. Absolutely.
Right. I have an email address. It's unlicensedtokill@gmail.com. And I'd certainly, you know, be, especially anybody else who has stories that are, you know, comparable
yep.
to this, but anybody who would like to contact me, I will have a website up shortly, which will be unlicensedtokill.net, or .org, excuse me, unlicensedtokill.org. But also, if, you know, I didn't even get into the and it would take up a program in of itself of all the nonsense that's been going on with our case with the district attorney's office, how they violated our rights.
Why don't you take a couple of minutes and just quickly run by that? Because I really want people to hear this. I should have had you do this earlier.
Okay. Well, you know, I'll give the a very abbreviated version that you'll get an idea.
Give the Cliff Notes version.
Yeah. I mean, first, and, you know, you can see where this is heading. We were told in writing that the preliminary hearing for this guy, and originally he was charged with felony vehicular manslaughter, attempting to flee the scene. That's what the police inspector.
And what would the penalty be for that?
Even the penalty for that is still, assuming that he wasn't drunk or didn't have any drugs or anything, is only maximum 3 years in jail, which is still absurd for killing somebody.
I agree, but at least that could have led to his being dumped out of the country.
Well, yes, if it was a felony and if he is under temporary protective status, that would get him booted out of the country.
Right.
So anyway, so the hearing was scheduled. It was Monday, December 6th. And in writing, we were told that, you know, the hearing probably wouldn't happen that day. We will call you and let you know beforehand. And again, we live in the Los Angeles area. This is San Francisco. On December 3rd, the evening of December 3rd, which was a Friday, we got a phone call from the DA's office telling us that the hearing was going to be continued and not to come up on Monday. They would let us know when the new date was. I'm sitting at my desk Monday night, 6:30. The phone rings. It's the assistant district attorney to tell me the results of the preliminary hearing and how upset she was that the judge knocked it down to a misdemeanor because he viewed it as an accident. And so it's now a misdemeanor. So first, of course, what do you mean you had the preliminary hearing? There is a thing in California called Marcy's Law, which we didn't know about at the time, which we're entitled to be at every preliminary hearing. We're entitled to speak. Let me rephrase that. We're entitled to be at every hearing, and we're entitled to speak at every hearing. So,
obviously, someone else was probably killed or whatever because of some madness.
It was. Marcy is it was the sister of the founder of Broadcom, Henry. I can't remember his last name. Henry Blodgett, maybe. He funded an initiative all by himself out here because his sister was murdered and they were abused when he was a teenager.
Right.
30 years ago. So
trying to right another wrong. Yep.
Right, and talking to I said, wait a minute, you can't do this. We, you know, we had a right to be there. Well, no, you don't. Well, I would have wanted to say something. You wouldn't have been allowed to speak. So she doesn't know what she's talking about or is flat out lying. And then I said, what can we do? There has to be something we can do. Nothing. There's absolutely nothing you can do. The judge has the right to do this. I'm going on vacation tomorrow. Here's the name of my boss. You can talk to him tomorrow. I call him up. He's in charge of the felony division and for the district attorney's office. Same thing. We could have been there. No, you didn't have to be here. You wouldn't have been able to speak. Same thing about we want to be able to do something. No, there's absolutely nothing you can do. Approximately a month and a half later, my wife and I demanded a meeting with the district attorney's office. We met with them for hours in a screaming match. What can we do? They finally said, well, you know, we could appeal. It's like, oh, you're telling us that now? Now, at that point, I had not read the transcript of the preliminary hearing. I had tried a couple times.
Understandable. I think it must have been pretty rough.
But it was not easy to read. But my wife said, get the transcript. We're going to go through it page by page, word by word, until we find something that's appealable. Well, it took all of 3 minutes. The judge decided that my son may have been in the intersection when the light turned yellow, so he's at fault as well, which is totally wrong. He could have actually been in the intersection when the light was red. It still wouldn't have mattered. And they didn't even know that he was. One eyewitness said it may have turned yellow. One eyewitness said, well, I don't know. Okay, here's your appealable thing. There were many others. So they decide to appeal, they said, well, let us think about it. The next day they told us they would appeal. They filed the appeal. The public defender responds back, two sentences, basically, you filed in the wrong court. My wife called up, no, absolutely not. We know we're right. I actually sent the appeal and everything to a professor, criminal law professor at my son's school. A week later, she comes back to me and she says, I hate to tell you this, I think they're right. 3 months later, the opinion comes back from it's a three-panel judge, you filed in the wrong court. That was April of 2011. To this day, they refuse to admit they filed in the wrong. All they're saying is it was a procedural error. But meanwhile, we lost our appeal rights. They have lied to us over and over again, documented in writing. I found out that they never, in the preliminary hearing, they never called the police inspector to testify, and he was the one who was going to testify. The guy was trying to flee. There were no skid marks. He never attempted to stop. And, you know, plus whatever other eyewitness testimony. And only two of the witnesses showed up, probably because the other two were told not to come. So we how could you not call this guy as a witness? In writing, from the district attorney, he says, you can only be an eyewitness in a preliminary hearing. You can only be a witness in a preliminary hearing if you're an eyewitness, which is a total lie. In preliminary hearings, hearsay evidence is admissible.
Yeah. I mean, this is such a.
I could go through this over and over and over again. Well, what we eventually found out, we were never looking to file suit. It wasn't our interest to do this. Well, eventually in October, I then found out they lied to me about the DMV, and the DMV gave this guy registration 3 years in a row without having driver's license. I funneled out some of the lies that we had had from the DA's office. So we put all this stuff together. We finally decide, okay, you know what? We have to sue the state. We have to sue the city. Well, California wrongful death has a 2-year statute of limitations. But for the state and for the city of San Francisco, it's only 6 months. Now, even though the stuff we discovered was in the 6 months, both the city and the state have denied us so far. Now, I'm trying to fight this, but I can't get an attorney, and there's one out there listening who will want to help me out. I'd be glad to, because, first of all, I feel my First Amendment, my right of redress, has been violated.
Yep.
The state is saying that if you're a Joe Schmo, you get 2 years. But if it's us and we purposely hide facts from you, we can run out the clock.
Did the driver give these people the MVP award?
Well, he should be. He should be kissing their ass and saluting them up forever, because they've taken a guy who, you know, they let him go the first time. You would even think, I mean, human nature, if you give a guy a break, the DA's office gave this guy a break in June of 2010. You would think if he then turns around and gets right back in the car and starts driving again and then kills somebody, you would think human nature would say, we're going to nail this guy to the wall. We gave him a chance, and look what he did. And a matter of fact, if he is here under temporary protective status, he's eligible to get a driver's license. So when they told me he was here legally, and I had no idea about TPS or anything at the time, I said, he's been in the country for 10 years. Why does he not have a driver's license when he can get one? He went to the DMV and got a California ID card, so he wasn't trying to hide from the system. There's got to be a reason. I was told by the DA's office, you know, I said, you got to check with the DMV. Maybe he failed his test. Maybe, you know, who knows, whatever. We were told the DMV does not keep those records. When I spoke to the DMV, I spoke to a woman from the DMV about...
And she probably said they do keep the records.
A month and a half ago. Well, she said, if you fail any part of the test, until you pass, that record will remain in the system. So if he went in and failed the written test and he never went back, it would be in the system he failed the written test. If he failed the eye test, it would be in that he failed the eye test. So they lied to us then. I found out that you can't, because he transferred the title of the car that he owned to another person. That's how they got it out of impound. I found out sometime in late October that it's illegal to transfer title when a car is in impound. When I asked the DA about it, she said, oh, I didn't know that. And we said, you know, we told you that you should have added the charges of fraud to these people, because that's what they did. He signed title over to somebody else. She got the car out. By her own admission, she gave it right back to him. And we were told, we don't think it's fraud, but we'll go to our special investigations unit and see what they have to say. Okay, fine. They never did it. They told us that. They never did it. That when
But you see what's happening? I just wrote an article for Caps, and I talked about the slippery slope. Because here's the problem. The name of the game is to not interfere with anybody coming across the border. This is about aiding, abetting, inducing, encouraging, shielding, and harboring. Those words, folks, are felonies under the immigration laws. And that's what sanctuary cities are doing. And I want you to think about this. There's four questions that I said that the American people should be asking any candidate, not only for the presidency, ideally for the presidency, but certainly federal office in general. If you were elected president, what would you do with the lawsuits against Alabama, Arizona, and any other state that would enforce immigration laws because the feds aren't? Number two, what would you do with the H-1B visas, all these high-tech workers coming in when Americans are out of work losing their homes to foreclosure? We have over 60,000 employees at TSA, the Transportation Safety Administration. So there's question three. How many ICE agents, immigration and customs agents, would you be willing to hire? We have 7,000 now. Well over half of them are doing customs work. So you may have 3,000 ICE agents for the whole country enforcing immigration laws as compared with 60,000-plus TSA employees. And finally, and this goes to this issue, if you have a city or a state that grants sanctuary status or has created a sanctuary environment for illegal aliens, then you're talking about a state that is committing felonies or a city that's committing felonies, aiding, abetting, harboring, shielding, inducing, and encouraging aliens to enter illegally, remain thereafter illegally. Would you at least be willing to cut off law enforcement funding for those municipalities and states? And would you go after anybody in the prison system who refuses to honor an ICE detainer? These are the laws that are designed to protect us. When you listen to the carnage, Drew's story is horrific. I mean, when I was on the air with you last Saturday, I didn't sleep the next night. This is a horrific story, but this is playing out day after day, dozens of people a week or more than that. I mean, we're talking about thousands of people a year dying the way that Don's son Drew did, because our politicians believe that they themselves are above the law. They look at the law the way that some people look at a menu when they walk into a restaurant. I think I'll have the chicken soup, but I really don't want the salad today. That's not what the laws are about. The laws, especially these laws, are designed to protect our lives. So any politician that could wave his hand dismissively and say, oh, I can't be bothered, is responsible for the carnage. And they need to be made responsible in the ballot booth, box. Am I right or wrong, Don?
No, you're absolutely right. You said there's 7,000 INS agents?
7,000 ICE agents, over half of whom are doing customs work, and almost all of their bosses came from customs, so they don't care about the immigration laws. And you have an administration that says, well, unless you're convicted of felonies, we want to give you employment authorization.
We want to put you
on a pathway to citizenship.
Right. There are over 2,500 cities in the United States that have declared themselves sanctuary cities. So that means there are more government employees protecting, because there's at least three per city, there are more government employees protecting illegal aliens than there are ICE agents trying to catch them.
And then when they catch them, they don't move them out of the country anyway. They give them employment authorization. They find
right.
reasons why they shouldn't be told to leave.
Yeah, well, I'm in my letter to Kamala Harris, I've said, this is exactly what I said. I said, there's no basis in law for the existence of sanctuary cities. When will you inform all of the cities in California who have either passed local statutes declaring as such or are practicing such policy that it is illegal to harbor criminals and to aid and abet criminal activity and require them to cease this practice immediately and to immediately report all persons violating federal law to the proper federal authorities?
Yeah, you know, the thing that you wrote to Governor Brown was amazing about the tanning booth.
Oh.
Why don't you
yeah.
just read the beginning of that? I want everybody to hear this. This was a beaut.
Well,
it was
this,
sarcasm
yeah.
that I mean, you really did it perfectly.
Well, you know, just, you know, I mean, first, before, and I do want to say that my state senator, and I'm not even going to mention her because she'll get trashed because of it, but my state senator has been extremely helpful delivering, and she's very, very liberal. I mean, you know, at least.
But again, this isn't about liberal or not.
No,
that's
no, that's
driving
right.
me
that's,
crazy.
That's right. But she has been having, you know, every communication that I send, she has hand-delivered, you know, to the governor. So first he got a letter before he signed the bill for the impound of cars, which, of course, he then went ahead and signed it. So, yeah, my opening line, dear Governor Brown, thank you so much for signing a bill to protect my children from tanning beds so they can then be run over by unlicensed drivers. Because,
I mean,
yeah,
boy.
We signed a bill that if you're under 18, you can't use a tanning salon because it's not safe.
But being on the road with the unlicensed illegal aliens, that's okay. I mean,
that's
it's
okay.
just mind-boggling. Can you do me a favor, please? If you could
sure.
put, and say it slowly, your email address.
Okay, unlicensedtokill@gmail.com.
unlicensedtokill@gmail.com.
Yes.
Okay, you know, folks, I have to tell you, Don, I wish there was no reason to have you on my program tonight. I have to tell you.
I wish I had never met you.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people have said that about me. But
for different reasons. I'm very happy that I met you. Let's put it this way. Unfortunately, the circumstances that caused our
exactly.
meeting.
Yeah, but I said that with a lot of the 9/11 family members for the same reasons. And I'm going to tell you, Don, I stand shoulder to shoulder with you. I will do whatever I can to help you get that message out there. But now, folks, we're going to ask you to do your job. Get involved. Get a clear message out there to the elected representatives. Make it clear to them that we're not as stupid as they hope that we are. We're not as lethargic and lazy as they hope that we are. Election Day is coming. And I hate to put it this way, but they're either with us or they're against us. If you don't believe that these laws that are supposed to protect our lives, protect our children, and protect our nation are critically important, you need to find a new line of work. And I don't care what party you're with. You could be with the Hopping Kangaroo Party for all I care. Enough is enough.
Yeah, the amazing thing is, at least in California, I don't know about other states, the laws are on the books. You know,
yeah,
nobody
just
has to pass
law.
Any laws. Just
enforce
them.
The law. Right. Well, you know, I'll just leave you with this thought. I spoke at the Tea Party in South Carolina, and I've been going all over the country doing speaking events. If anyone knows of any such opportunities, you can reach me through the website, michaelcutler.net, or you can contact me through CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization, at capsweb.org. But I bumped into Mr. Gingrich, and I said to him, Mr. Speaker, why on earth, with all this talk about creating jobs, aren't you talking about the need to liberate jobs? To create jobs takes time and money. To liberate jobs just takes enforcing the immigration laws, because as they are taking illegal aliens out the back door of that factory or that office or that place of employment, lawful immigrants and United States citizens can be walking through the front door and take those jobs the very same day and perhaps stave off foreclosure of their homes. And the guy looked at me as though, you know, oh, my God, he was the deer and stuck in the headlights of the onrushing 18-wheeler. This is common sense. The immigration laws are supposed to save American lives and save American jobs. We have never more than today needed both of those efforts to be undertaken by our government. Let's not confuse enforcing immigration laws with being against people who are of ethnic backgrounds. This is about preventing exploitation and protecting our lives and protecting our jobs. And believe me, folks, this is far from a conservative issue. This is purely an American issue. I don't think I could put it any more succinctly. What do you think, Don?
Very well said. Very well said. It's not conservative, liberal. It's not white, black, Hispanic.
I'm a New Yorker. I live in the most ethnically diverse city probably in the world. I couldn't imagine living anywhere else. I'm here to stay. But this is about common sense and about making sure that we indeed have a government of the people, by the people, for the people. Don, I'm going to thank you for joining me. I'll speak with you off air shortly. I'm just going to say goodbye to my audience out there.
Okay.
And I thank you so much for being on with me tonight.
Thank you. Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me and letting me say so much.
No, my pleasure. Again, I wish you didn't need to have this conversation tonight. But, again, my condolences to you, your wife, your family, and I stand with you to end the madness.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Good night, Don. I'll talk to you in a bit.
Okay. Good night.
Yes. Well, folks, that was Don Rosenberg. I am continuing on my mission. I am intractable about this. We the people are going to succeed. All that I ask is that you please get involved. As I always like to say at the end of my commentaries, I always like to remind people that democracy is not a spectator sport. Please give that little phrase some thought over the weekend and think about what you yourself plan to do in the coming week to make your voice heard by those politicians who are paid to represent you. Good night, everybody. Have a terrific weekend.